everyone. Welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and today's guest is Cal Dietz. Cal is the head strength coach for the Olympic sports at the University of Minnesota, where he's had a tremendous amount of success. He's coached 400-plus All-Americans. He's had 29 Big Ten championships or NCAA team championships. And he's worked with professional athletes at almost every level, NHL, NBA, NFL, pro baseball, and even pro boxing. He's the creator of XLAthlete.com, as well as the author of Triphasic Training. Today, you're going to learn quite a bit about triphasic training, try to bring innovators of concepts on for us all to learn from, and I know we're going to get a lot out of it. All right, super pumped to have Cal Dietz on the program today. Cal is the head strength coach for the Olympic sports at Minnesota. He's the author of Triphasic Training. And, one of the goals that I have for this show is to bring innovators of a concept on and talk about it. And so Triphasic Training is a very interesting concept. I read the book. Awesome job with that, man. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks, Coach, for having me. It's just a pleasure to be here. And I appreciate everything you're doing in the field, and it's great to be on and share some new ideas with people.
Awesome, man. Well, hey, we graduated college about the same time, and so all I heard about as an NAIA football player was freaking Finley U. So here's your chance to gloat a little bit. Yeah. You know, I played at Ottawa University. We went about, I don't know, two rounds deep in the playoffs, but you guys dominated. Tell a little bit about how you got into the field of strength and conditioning and what you're doing now.
Well, obviously, my interest started at Finley with strength coaches there. We trained hard. Guys, I don't know. In Ohio, it seems like the high school strength coaches back then were becoming more apparent. You know, coaches were serious about it. Kids were, the competition in Ohio seemed like was fairly stiff to play. So we just, it's kind of that internal competition that everybody knew they had to train in the off season. And then I was one of the harder workers in the weight room. So then my strength coaches and other coaches asked me if I'd want to do a GA or things like that. And I said, sure. And as you know, when we got out of the strength field or out of college coach, back when we graduated, there wasn't almost, the strength coach field wasn't as respected probably as it is now. But I said, sure, and I actually ended up getting a call from Minnesota to come up here and be a strength GA right after college. So that was pretty awesome opportunity. And then basically I left after my GA, and I felt I did a pretty good job, and they asked me to come back and be a strength coach here. I was young. I was 26 when I got the job, but I worked hard, and I kept a positive attitude, even though the situation probably, I worked as hard as you possibly could, 60, 70 hours a week, but I kept a good attitude during that time. And I think people just, that's why I was brought back. And I think that's why people believe in what I do, because of my attitude that we can always figure something out or get it done. And that's kind of been my path in a small nutshell, minus 60, 70 hour weeks, on a daily basis.
No question. Well, you know, when you get into the field, when you first get into the field, you have all the answers, right? And then as you go through, you start to learn that you don't know nearly as much as you think you do. And, one of my mentors, Mark Sanovich, he'd always say, that you, as you go on in the field, you learn how to ask the right questions. And I felt like reading your book was an example of that, where, it was one of those things where you right away, you didn't really know. I mean, you had trouble kind of coming up with, do I understand this completely? And then as you read through, you kind of formulated the right questions to ask. And so if you could kind of explain triphasic training a little bit.
Yeah. The hard part was, I was very fortunate. I had a track coach, Phil Lundin, as I mentioned in the book, world-class coach. He kind of mentored me through this process of building triphasic training. And I was very fortunate to, we would try a training method, and if it didn't work, he would tell me, because we could identify right away that the kids' times or things weren't working correctly. And so I just kept remodeling how I adjusted the loads. And as you saw with the undulated model, now my undulated model is kind of switched, because instead of doing the classic undulated Bulgarian model where the high volumes at the end of the, or at the beginning of the week, I switched it to the end when the kids were beat up, you know, so you could, so you kind of worked with the body during the course of the week so that you actually don't interfere with the training. So you really beat them up at the end of the week, right, and then they got an extra day on the weekend. And really, you know, I'm thinking I'm programming around Friday night wing and beer night, or just going out is really what I'm trying to do around this thing. So it's really the college model that that helped me stumble upon the triphasic, or at least that part of the loading model. Now the triphasic aspect, as I mentioned, kind of was facilitated by Mel Siff and Giles Cometti and Dr. Yeses. But I put that sequencing together, and essentially the sequencing is an eccentric block 2 to 3 weeks at the beginning, then the next block is an isometric phase, and then the next block is your concentric, and you put that together, and I was just able to see some amazing results in regards to just results in track and field and swimming, and all these are sports that are truly measurable in everything, and that's been my benefit of working with those sports. Now, you know, the unique thing about triphasic training is that block and those focuses of eccentric, isometric. I mean, I got coaches from junior high to high school to collegiate to Olympic caliber saying, I don't have to change my program. I just make a focus a little bit. And that's basically what it is. It's not like it's some, you can only bench press, you can only do this. You can add it into any program. You just slide it right in, just make sure it's the right time of the year. And it's, you know, and really one of the unique things that I didn't place everything in the book. We got about 100 pages of the second book done. But ultimately, you know, some of the unique things that we found in biochemistry and molecular biology, like on the eccentric phase, we found out when the muscle's under contraction and you lengthen it with, for example, a heavy bench or a heavy squat, that so the actin and myosin heads actually pop apart and then they're damaged. And then what happens is the immune system comes in and rebuilds them, cleans them out, rebuilds them thicker. So really the eccentric phase is a remodeling of the tissue so that when you go to change directions or reverse weight, then what happens is it actually you got better tissue to do that. And that's part of the reasons why it worked. Now, I didn't throw the biochemistry aspect in the first triphasic training because saving it for the second one. But sure, that's part of the reason. So it does go deep into even the molecular level at times. But, you know, ultimately coaches just need to know why it happens. And that's the premise, because over the years, I've just tried to find, why does this work? I do, you know, and coaches, you know, when we're young strength coaches, I'm very fortunate to sit here and go, okay, this works. I didn't know why, but we're going to keep doing it, and I'll try to figure out why it works later, because, right, you know, you're always coaching. You don't have time to run to research 100 hours to figure out why something worked, you know?
Well, that was one of the things in the book that I really liked was how you used your athletes as lab rats. You know, it seemed like every time, every different block, you would say you had a story about training the hockey team or the tennis team and how you tried this program and it worked or it didn't work, and you went back to the drawing board. You know, even amongst that, though, what I wanted to ask you about was how you would take, even within a training period, you know, you'd take a hockey team and you would divide them in half, and half the group did this type of training. You talked about it like with the 5-10-5, you know, yeah, in the book. You know, half the team did this type of training, the other half did that. How did you go about programming that into where the kids didn't feel like they were getting slighted, or how did you sell it to your coaches that, you know what, I'm going to do this with this group and this with this group, or were they even privy to that?
Well, with the coaches, you know, they didn't really know the inner details of it, you know, and they can't, a lot of this was done in the off season, summer, so that you couldn't necessarily see, you know, they couldn't watch the workouts. And then I sold the kids on it, so they didn't complain to the coaches, like, I think, you know, you might need this quality, so this is what the program you're going to do. And they feel actually it's a little more individualized, right? But I split it up, and you're just going, you just see the different results or the different needs, and that's where it dawned on me. I'm going, man, you know, if I can keep doing this and the modeling, and I'd always try to do it early, so then if I needed to fix something or make some adjustments later, but you know, honestly, this book is really the work of thousands of athletes and people put together, I was just kind of the one overseeing the whole deal, you know, and I've been fortunate to be here and people willing to work hard. And, you know, don't get me wrong, every athlete I've ever had doesn't always work hard, as you know that. Oh, I mean, some of them are just trying to survive my program, and it gets hard, you know, if you're in the middle of that triphasic about the fourth week. Really, that's when everybody starts to overtrain a little bit. And with the end of the isometrics, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you're telling kids to do things, and they just sometimes in the middle of the work, they can't remember. I mean, their mental focus is shot, and you're going, okay, you have to understand that. It's not they don't like you or they're not listening. They're just mentally kind of starting to overtrain. But, you know, it's with the triphasic again, the unique thing is that I can – I'll place it in periodically throughout the year, about 1 to 2 times, probably mostly off season once, and then I'll shove it in maybe once or twice, but it's at a lighter load during the course of the in season, so that and when you do it, you can see the transition with everybody. Their weight, their squat goes up and down faster. Their transition agility is much faster. Their joint stiffness, even at top end speed, so their hips don't undulate. Because when their foot strikes the ground, if they don't have the strength to instantaneously stop it, then there's undulation, which causes a more metabolic – it's actually harder to run, so you're slower basically for that reason.
Well, it's important to note that, you know, you mentioned it in the book, and again, that this was about a decade's worth of work. This wasn't something that you just came up with overnight. It was – You would try something, you'd go back to the drawing board, and you'd go back to work, and that's such an important aspect of what we do.
Well, Coach, you know, the hard part for this is evaluating, like setting down and say, okay, evaluating my program with my assistants, I go, okay, what doesn't work? What can we make better? What are we, you know, and people are sitting there, and these are people you're teaching. They're sitting there, so I'm, well, I don't think this works. And you're going, man, I thought that worked. And I'm going, so it's actually, you know, I call it a debriefing, you know, and I've read a number of things on the military and, you know, Delta and SEALs, and they all debrief. And I think I read once where they had a successful mission, and yet they found 20-some things that went wrong in the mission by debriefing. Okay. And they try not to make those mistakes again. And the hard part is at the end of the year, you just got to sit down with your staff and plan for 4 or 5 hours of saying, hey, what are we doing here? Are we just doing this to do it? Or is there a reason? Is there the main purpose behind it? And that gets tough as the guy that's in charge, because you're going, okay, am I doing everything that I possibly can the right way? And then I question myself, and you walk out at me and go, man, I might be doing everything wrong. It seems like you're not. But you got to let your egos go, you know, go aside. And you're right, that decade, it sounds like a lot, but you know what? You got to start somewhere.
No question.
You know what I mean? I'm starting a project tomorrow that it's going to take a long time with some force plates and things, but hey, if it takes 3 years, then it takes 3 years. We got to get it done eventually. You know, it's a process. So that's where we're going.
You use the analogy that, you know, strength coaches are like mechanics, you know, and that we manage stress, and that we're really kind of, you know, we can't control the exterior necessarily, but we can kind of control how we stress the engine, stress the body. Talk a little bit about the different types of stress.
Well, I mean, from the – I like to call myself a mechanical stress practitioner. It's just to sound more formal. But, you know, we really don't know how we respond to stress truly, because the hard part is there's a lot of emotion that's tied to the stress. So if an athlete thinks that your heavy max effort day, if they love that, for example, and he loves eating it up, that stress is not as hard on him as the kid that hates going heavy, but you got to go because he's weak as a kid and you got to get him strong. So that stress is going to be more harmful. So the hard part is managing all that. You know, I'm not sure there's what the most effective way is, because again, Coach, you know, I don't have an Omega Wave or 40,000 to spin on a Omega Wave that takes 7 minutes to test somebody.
Right.
And like, I got a few methods that we're coming up with and mixing around. Maybe we can come in sometime when I'm allowed to talk about those. It shouldn't be too long, but ultimately to manage that stress, and that's why I came back to the undulated model, was that I did a medium heavy. And really, Coach, if you look at the undulated model, if you go like a medium heavy, and what happens at the cellular level is there's some lactate produced, which causes an increase in testosterone levels for the next loading day, which would be a max effort, okay? And then by then you're pretty tired and your testosterone levels will decrease. Well, that's when you do your more volume day, And that's how I, you know, from biochemical aspect to the neurological aspect, I've just seen that be fairly successful. And I even tried to do the max effort day on Monday because I used to think, well, that they'd be fresh, but they never did very well. I couldn't, you know, it's like I needed to set them up. And you've probably seen that before. Yep, and like, Coach, everything in that book, people email and say, man, I've seen it. I just kind of basically sequenced it in a certain way that seemed to work for the body. And I mean, people email me and say, hey, Cal, I've done practically everything in your book. I just haven't thought of it the way you just laid it out, basically.
No question. Yeah.
And Coach, that goes back to the last question, the evaluation of yourself and questioning what you do. I mean, that becomes hard. Coach, right now, one of my next books is working on the gene expression of your interpretation of your environment. Now, I don't know if I'll be able to read it and get anything out of it. Honestly, I tell people I'm the dumbest guy in the room when I walk in. Trust me. I just ask all the right questions, it seems like. And I'm not afraid to admit that. But ultimately, we'll see. But again, I got to start reading that because I know that the gene expression and your interpretation of your environment is very important in managing all that stress. And coaches, you know, if you travel. So let's look at some of these, like, big-time football games, Alabama this year. You can't tell me that after they – was it that overtime that they won in or you know, and then they got beat the next week.
Yeah.
I mean, the emotions in that – I mean, I'm sure that team was shot, but you got to play the next week. You have to probably do some drastic the hard part is you probably have to change everything your coach has thought about. Oh, we won last week because we worked hard. Well, that next week might be – you might have to consider – maybe I give them an extra day of a light practice just to help them get recovered because that emotional stress of – and then flying home, getting late. Coach, yeah. You see those guys. I mean, and the thing is, I think it's hard for a strength coach to explain. As you know, Coach, you've had these guys in on Sunday or Monday to work out after a big win or a big emotional loss and traveling, and you go, they're awful. Mm-hmm. But then what do? You walk up to coaches and say, coaches, we need to go a little lighter in practice. And they're going to barbecue you. You know what I mean?
Exactly, so, right.
And, unless you're really close with the coach and say, hey. But then his assistants will say, oh, this is wrong. You know what I mean? We got to work harder. I'm like, sometimes that's not the case. But stress is something that you have to manage and deal with.
No, that's another important point you made there was as young strength coaches or as coaches in general, it's so important to surround yourself with people that are so much smarter than you because it challenges you to be better, you know, and if you're constantly the big fish in the room, you're never going to get any better.
I know, and be willing to accept what's working, what's not working, you know, and tell your guys. And I get more mad at them if I find out that something's not working and they didn't bring it up.
Absolutely.
If they, you know what I mean? Because absolutely. I'm never going to get mad at you for questioning. But ultimately, if you're not going to tell me that you don't think this is working or this could be put somewhere different, then I need to know about that. And that's where I get frustrated if somebody doesn't do that. And again, that's an open mind. You know what I'm saying? You got to have an open mind.
Got to have it. You talked about the difference between undulating periodization and mixed training systems and really how a majority of the programs out there are kind of mixed training systems right now. What are the biggest differences?
Well, so this would be part of my second book, but I'll throw it out there, and you're only going to hear it on your show, so keep that. All right. So what we got, Coach, is the best analogy I can use is if you got the organism in the human body and you're trying to train for a triathlon and a powerlifting meet, you're just pulling the organism in too many directions. It can't adapt to the highest level. So then I ask the question, well, what's the other extreme of that? Well, the other extreme is essentially training at only one specific thing. Now, how do you control that? So realistically, let me give you the example. A coach may do some max effort back squats, but then, you know, and I think this a lot of this came from Charlie Francis, you would come out and do some tempo runs or something like that. Well, at the cellular level, what's happening is that you're going to get the adaptions to max strength, but then if you go do tempo runs, that's more aerobic versus alactic or creatine phosphate. And the problem is the organisms are trying to adapt to two different things. Okay.
Right.
So for example, then I'll do a back squat and then for conditioning, we'll do short sprints. Okay. And then you're trying not to get the cross conflict. Now that's why I switched everything to time. in my sets, as you saw in my book. Yep. And the sole purpose behind that was just to regulate the exact amount of stress that we have. So then if I'm squatting for 5 seconds on a max effort, my sprints are for 5 seconds. And so I had some strength coaches get in a group and call me and say, Cal, so what are you doing for aerobics that day? Well, if you looked at my program, my athlete was doing 70 bouts of lifting and running that lasted 5 seconds. Well, 50% of that is aerobic. Right. And you have, you know, you can say, oh, well, we got close to 70 plays in football or something. Well, I mean, that's essentially almost a football game. Yep. You know what I'm saying? Yep. So you don't, and then if you really want to focus on aerobic, so then they look at my program, and at the end of the week, let's say, is when I would do an aerobic day. And let's say I was supposed to go 80% or 90 or probably 80%. What happens is all I got to do to go from a 80% high volume day, which would be in my world more lactate or glycolysis.
Yep.
What happens is all you got to do is drop the percentage from 80 to 60, decrease the rest so it stays aerobic, and you got a basically an aerobic work capacity circuit, which will help them recover from the week's load. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So that's why I switched the time and making sure that all the stress is very specific on that day, because again, if you do a lactate day and then do aerobic at the end of it, you get results. Everybody gets results.
Right.
It's just for level. The cellular level all the way up, you get a little bit better results at the end. So then you just gotta, and the hard part is it's managing, again, managing the stress to be very specific. And you know, sometimes you could mix it, like there's times where I mix it also, but to get to the highest level, and once an athlete gets to a certain level, you have to be very specific in the stress. Now, coach, you could even say some of our a lot of D1 football players may not ever get to the highest level. You know what I'm saying? Because the work capacity or whatever. But ultimately, I think that's the direction you want to go. Now, people say, well, that's only advanced athletes. However, keep in mind, if you have a high school athlete and you do very specific stress, that the body isn't wasting energy adapting in all different stress. So we've actually had great results from high school coaches saying, well, yeah, I did very specific stress and they got better exactly what we thought. So, and it's just because the body doesn't have all the energy to, the only reason it can adapt to a triathlon and a powerlifting meet is because there's not enough energy in the body to adapt to both. Now, you know, coach, if they took drugs, that increases that metabolic system and the energy, and that's why drugs work.
That's right.
We can't obviously give them drugs, nor would we want to.
That's right.
But, you know, that, I mean, it's just, so one of the questions I always looked at is, why do drugs work? So then I was working on, why do they work? Well, and then I laid out the stress model, and it just seems that they increase your ability to handle more stress. So then, well, I got to try to figure out how to handle more stress without giving them drugs, obviously, because that would be an issue in those cases.
No question. That's when you talk about training goals and you're talking about strength and power and speed and balance, you know, and that's the hardest thing that I've fought with as a strength coach is, you know, I have 8 weeks. In January to spring ball, and I have 8 weeks in the summer, you know, and when somebody asks me, what are you training for, strength or speed or power, I say yes. What I liked about what you did is you're really talking about the residual effects of training and how you would throw a block back in to make sure that you continually kept that system or that training variable peaked, or trained.
You know, the biggest thing is that I think if you just go back to getting strong right away, build some base, get strong, and then everything else kind of falls into place, you know. But you're right, coach. I mean, with college football, the way they string spring ball out so long, you only have that 8 weeks in the, and I'm just sitting there going, this is amazing to me how much little off season they truly have.
Right.
I mean, all the academic breaks, and it was amazing. And so, yeah, there's literally no way, unless you sit down with your coaches, to say, okay, can I truly implement all the a true block system that first 8 weeks in the off season? Because you're going to sit there and go, my coaches are going to want them in shape for spring ball, and to play mid-season, you're like, they're not going to be there. You'd have to explain that to them, that, coach, let's be as strong and as fast as we possibly can. Let's be a little out of shape. I'd rather be a little out of shape and be as strong and as fast as we can than me trying to spend 3 or 4 weeks getting them in shape so that the coaches feel good about them being in shape in spring ball when it doesn't even matter, you know. But you can't explain that to a lot of the
–
you know, coach, you're right. You've been there. You've been down that road. And then, you know, with football, you know, it's just a – sometimes I think they got to get out of the paradigm of working hard versus you got to work hard, but you also got to work smart. That's just my opinion. You know what I'm saying? As you know, you can't win without working hard, but it's about – I think you got to try to mesh the two as much as you possibly can.
Well, given that variable, you know, this time of year, we're shooting this in the wintertime during the winter training period, you know, and they just finished recruiting – you know, it's very typical that they're going into these mat drill sessions, you know. Yeah. And in the book, you know, you use a 3-day program from a simplistic standpoint of just keeping it consistent, but you give a 4, a 5, and even a 6-day layout as well. Given that, you know, how much would you vary the number of training days? You know, like what I would do, for example, is I would go a 4-day workout plan prior to recruiting,
right,
you know, signing day, and then afterwards I'd go to a 3-day split and incorporate those two mat drills on the day,
sure,
the rest days. How would you go about incorporating the triphasic training method into this time period?
You know, I try to probably get the triphasic done before the mat drill started. Okay,
yeah.
Just because there's a lot of stress in that those days, which will make them theoretically a little better for the mat drills. Now, if you look at like the triphasic first 4 blocks, first 4 weeks, if you're going to do 2-week blocks, the eccentric and the iso, your time under tension with a heavy load is 20 or 24 seconds. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of conditioning. I mean, your heart rate gets up there, so it's also some conditioning in there too. So it's not like they're getting out of shape. And then, you know, ideally, coach, it's so hard because if you could control, let's say you get through your triphasic and then you go into your mat drills, if you could control the duration of the mat drills to better match up with your weight room stress so that the mat drills aren't 30 or 40 seconds and become so aerobic and you're trying to work lactate or alactic in the weight room, you know, where things can conflict. If I think a lot of the mat drills, if they could do even shorter duration, which I think a lot of people or coaches have mixed in with their mat drills, a little shorter duration and make sure that it's such high quality that mimics the football, the play. Because you and I both know it's 100 miles an hour for 3 to 5 seconds. Now, I think the mat drills would be nice if you could do that. Maybe instead of 5, you go 7 or 10. But ultimately, I think that's the biggest, you know. I would rather have my athletes go 7 to 10 seconds hard on repeated bouts than do 30 seconds or 20 seconds at a light intensity. You know the correlation there, obviously.
Yeah,
is
no
most
question.
Important. Yep.
Well,
but
you know, taking that into, say, the season then, you know, you have your 3 blocks, you have your over 80, and then you got your under 55 and the whole deal. How do you incorporate your training blocks into the end season when you're dealing with an injured athlete? You know, because very rarely am I dealing with a guy – just like you are in hockey, I'm sure, where they're 100%.
Right. So I'll either do a single leg. So all I do is, you know, and you don't necessarily have to do the triphasic exactly in order. So, for example, once you address it in the off season, which you should be able to do in order process, the in season, like I'll look at my schedule and go, okay, I got a couple weeks here where maybe the opponents aren't as hard or we got an off week. I'll hit one day, just one day of eccentric, because you only have to readdress that quality. You don't necessarily have to hit the full cycle to get some benefits because you've already been through it in the off season. And then I may go a week or two, even 2 weeks or 3, and then I'll address the isometric quality. And that, coach, that may only be one day of the cycle in season because the other day will be too close to the game and dynamic. So really, if you look at it, I might hit the eccentric 2 workouts, the isometric for 2 workouts during the whole season just to readdress that quality. And we're not beating them up too much just because of the stress that they incur. You know what I'm saying?
And then how long is that, you know, and you talk about it again in the book, I don't want to give away, but how long is that residual effect then? You know, how many times do you need to, you know, how many weeks would need to go by before you could hit that eccentric again?
In season or in just season? In general?
In season.
Yeah. You know what, Coach? Here's what I've seen, and it kind of went along with what Bondarchuk talked about. There's four types of motor skill learners. There's the two types that learn fast. One retains it forever, it seems like. The other one doesn't retain it, but they learn it fast. Then there's slow learners. And really, if you really want to look at it, Coach, if you're watching your athlete squat and they can't transition fast with a heavier load, then you probably just need to go back and address it. So the eccentric part or the isometric. So let me give you an example. I had one athlete that was pretty special, and he didn't really ever do the whole triphasic block because, Coach, he would literally do it on Monday, the eccentric, and he would do his max effort, and it looked better on Wednesday. So we'd only do it when he needed it because you could see the transition. That's if you want to get to the highest levels of coaching, but Coach, it's hard because you could spot that. Your assistants might, so you have to watch everybody squat on your football team, where, you know, that might be hard, but your assistants, you could teach them to learn it, you know what I'm saying? Sure. But again, it's hard with all your guys. But ultimately, to me, that's the highest level because I can watch that athlete say, okay, he needs more eccentric strength because he can't transition very well. So we address it one, two times, and then he probably doesn't need it because he'll get better in season. So, but you could go, I would say, you know what, if you had a full-blown triphasic training method out of season, you could probably only have to address it one time in season. I think you'd be all right. And then, well, if you did it at the beginning, you might want to try it like post-season, getting ready for bowl, the bowl season. You might try it a week or two of 1 week of each just in the post-season bowl, which could help you get a little bit better, I think.
Sure. Well, last question here. You mentioned kind of implementing the program, you know, and one of the things, you know, going through, I thought I had a complex card, and then I look at yours and I'm going, holy cow, you know, at first glance. But then you go through and you explain everything. Talk about that process a little bit of how you go through and you explain things to your athletes, and then how you implement and monitor those types of workouts.
So one of the faults of my program is that I change the exercises. Now, the exercise may stay the same, but the tempos will change. So the faults with that is that you constantly have to coach and be there, and the young kids may screw it up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So what I've done is, what I try to do, Coach, is I'll sit there and I'll watch the squats, and one of my assistants are all watching the squats. And what we do then is they may leave the squat, go do a hurdle hop, and then maybe go do some rehab or prehab exercises while they're resting. Well, I set it up so that the interns will just watch that rehab that day. And you can't do that exercise anywhere else in the weight room except where we prescribe. Right. So then when they walk over, they see the other athletes doing exactly what they're supposed to do. The intern's watching it. And then they'll go to the next exercise, and that's done in the same area. So we basically prescribe the exercises, and you can only do it where you're told to do it. So I'm watching the main squats, and I'll watch the other stuff if they're all done.
Right.
And then we go back and we start the squats. So and it's hard, but you got to have manpower to do that. Like my whole system, it would take me, if I went to a new school, it would take me maybe a year or two to get it all implemented, just because if I'm by myself, there's no way I could implement this. But but now I have older guys that know exactly. If I make up a new exercise, put the name right, the tempo right, they actually know it without me showing them. Okay, so then they teach the young kids, and as you know, when you've been somewhere, there's a system in play. It's pretty special when things start to run. I mean, you know, my interns or assistants have never seen my off-season program. Day one, it clicks, and everybody's jumping around doing things, and they're going, "Oh, I've never seen anything like it." It's literally a circus, but it's an organized circus anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Question.
So
no question.
One of the ways I've come up with managing. And Coach, I just started that, and again, it took me about 10 years to figure that out, that was the best way to do it. So I'm like, this is the only way to get it done, and this is how we're going to get it done. So,
well, man, I know you share the same passion I do for constantly learning and constantly challenging yourself, and that's exactly what this book did for me. It challenged the way that I was thinking about things. And like you said, there's elements and pieces that I've been doing for a lot of years and had various levels of success with, but then turn around and seeing another way of putting it together was phenomenal for me. So it really challenged me, and I appreciate you putting it out.
Well, hey, Coach, I'll be honest with you. You know, people think, I mean, I write my programs, and honestly, people have shared their programs with me, manipulated, and they're writing better programs than I do personally, and using my methods already. Honest to God, I've seen it already. So I've just been fortunate to share my knowledge, and it comes back, and people are giving it better. Seriously, they're doing a better job of writing their programs, and I'm like, I'm going to steal that idea. Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. No. So I've just been fortunate to share things, and I feel lucky about it.
That's awesome. Well, where can people stay up with you? I know you got XL Athlete, and we're going to put the link to the book in the show notes here, but what are some ways to stay in touch with you?
Well, you know, I try to answer all my emails. I get a lot a day, as you do. And then just I'm trying to put out the blog. I try to make sure I give something every couple days. So I will also hopefully within the next year have the second book put together, but you never know how that goes with coaching. I mean, it could be 2 years. We'll see. I'm very fortunate. My co-author, he took all my stuff. He put it together. He is I picked a good co-author, and that's really the big thing as a coach you got to do.
There's no question.
No question. So, and you know, XO Athlete in the blog, and, I'll tell you what, if we want to come back and do another one of these sometime, just let me know, coach. I'll be here.
Absolutely, man. I appreciate you coming on. Thanks a lot, Cal.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
As usual, guys, we've linked up everything that we talked about in the interview down below in the show notes. You know, everything from xlathlete.com, Cal's website, to a link to be able to buy his book. And, you know, Cal was very generous, and he offered up a 20% discount for Iron Game Chalk viewers. For either the ebook or the hard copy book. And if you want to get that deal, you can go to ronmckeefrey.com/triphasic, TRIPHAIASIC, TRIPHAISIC, and get that 20% discount. So while you're there, make sure you join the mailing list where I send out any kind of VIP information, any kind of announcements. You're also able to get a video, and you can, while you're there, click on any of the social media and stay up to date with what we got going on. So until next time, we'll talk to you later. Take care.